Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And another busy show this week. We'll bring you all the fallout from Australia as Tim Payne steps down as captain just days after the squad for the first two test matches was named. International cricket returns to TalkSport 2 this week as India hosts New Zealand in a two-match test series. And we'll look ahead to that, which starts on Thursday. And finally, we'll be joined by the incoming head of cricket at Derbyshire, Mickey Arthur. So plenty to discuss over the next hour. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Harmy, we've got Robert Crash Craddock on the line from Brisbane, and we'll get his take on the extraordinary sexting scandal which saw Tim Payne step down as captain. I'm a little confused about the detail of it, but it was a heck of a shock, wasn't it? We'll find out more from Crash in just a moment. But your initial thoughts?
Yeah, it was a huge shock, and especially for somebody who had been given the all clear a few years ago when it actually happened. But unfortunately, when you hold the highest, the leader of the national team, and I think the standards that you have to set, unfortunately for Tim, that the Cricket Australia has decided that they want him to step down. And whether that's a tactical thing from Australia's point of view, thinking, right, we can get a better man in here because he's done his job. But it was a huge shock and something that, in the next 2 weeks, leading into the Ashes, it's going to be intriguing to see. One, is Tim Payne going to be in the side? And two, if he isn't, who's going to replace him?
Crash, thank you so much for joining us. Your time is always of the greatest value. I see Cricket Tasmania have described the treatment by Cricket Australia of Tim Payne as the worst of it by an Australian Test captain in 50 years. Can you clarify?
Yeah, since Bill Laurie, a plumber by trade, was working out of his job and was found out over the radio that he was being replaced by Ian Chappell as Australian Test captain in an Ashes series in 70-71. So that is an incorrect, I mean, I get what they're saying, but it's not a correct comparison, Manners, for the reason that Tim Payne, say what you like about, the concessions to adults who are very happy to communicate with themselves on a fairly sort of tawdry basis. But he did send photos of his genitals to this lady who was not his wife. So, yeah, there was an issue there. He didn't break any law, but, there was not like Bill Laurie, who was just shunted out of the job and wasn't even told he was sacked. So Tim was at fault. The incident happened before he was made captain. It appeared to Cricket Australia's board after he was made captain. They had a meeting about it. They had a lawyer in, and the lawyer said, look, sexting is quite not rampant, but it's very frequent in Australian society now. And the board members looked at each other and scratched their heads and their chins. They didn't really know how to react. But the lawyer said that because it was two consenting adults, there had been no crime.
Crash, so we are correct in thinking that Cricket Australia set up squeaky clean Tim to lead the new era of Australian cricket in the aftermath of the Sandpapergate incident at Newlands, in the full knowledge that there was this skeleton in the closet, which I assumed they thought would never come out?
Not quite right, Manners. They found out about 6 months after they appointed him. That was when the lady complained to Cricket Australia. She's got currently fighting 63 charges of stealing from when she used to work at Cricket Tasmania. So, and Tim's brother-in-law was also, he was actually sacked from Cricket Tasmania for a texting affair with the same woman. So, look, it's a tawdry affair at all levels. It really is. They took the gamble it would never come out. And, you know, Harmy, you know this, and Manners, you know this, sportsmen are risk takers, you know. Yeah. It was a good life. He was leading as Australian captain, and he was 8 weeks away from being scot-free, I reckon. If he'd got through the last test against England and retired, it would have just suddenly, I'm not saying it would have, wouldn't have come up, but I have to say, Manners, I did know whispers about this 2 years ago. There was rumours that, you know, certain news outlets were poking around, chasing it, but no one, but the story didn't come out.
And Crash, the simple question is, does he play first test Brisbane?
Yeah. Do you know what, Harmy? I've just been on a television show talking to Mark Waugh about that. And he's, Tasmania are playing a Sheffield Shield game at the moment, and he's not in it. He's playing second 11. So I think that it's so close. He took six catches yesterday. He made one today. Because he has been chosen in the squad and there's no second keeper, I think he's more likely to play than not. He looks pretty fit. He's had major neck surgery. He hasn't played since April. He's 36 years old. Australia generally, when their captain resigns, they quit the game as well. Most Australian captains do. They rarely linger. But he has been chosen in this first test team. And I think the mood is that if he's physically sound, it's a very hard decision to drop him.
And who do they take? Who takes over then, Crash? Because can they, I personally, if I was Australian, I wouldn't have a problem with Steve Smith going back as leader, but I'm sure that will cause even as many problems as Tim Payne has just had. But if it's not Steve Smith, who has natural leader, done the job before, can you give it to Pat Cummins with five test matches in so many short space of time with his body? Or do they go with someone like Marnus Labuschagne?
Well, Cummins will get it. He will be the new captain of Australia. It's interesting in Australian cricket history, no Australian fast bowler has ever captained an Australia to win a test. I mean, we've been playing for 140-odd years or a bit more. So there's a moral behind that, isn't it? That it's not really suited to fast bowlers. And, Harmy, I'd be interested in your perspective. You've saw a few around the traps like Sean Pollock. But Pat, last captain, seriously, in about the under-13s. He did New South Wales last year, but he was always the youngest guy in his team, being a superstar on the rise. So he was very rarely captain. So he's a really cerebral guy. Everyone likes him. But it has to be, for my money, P. Cummins captain and S. Smith vice captain. Harmy, you could not have Steve Smith captain because of Sandpapergate. I wrote a column the other day saying Smith must be vice captain, because he can run the ship while Cummins is resting between overs. And Cummins has, as a bowler, you've got to get the vice captain you want. I mean, we're not talking Graham Smith captain here, or, Nasser Hussain, someone who makes the vice captain invisible. We're talking a bowler who needs help, and that has to be Smith. But when I wrote it, within 2 hours, there was 20 comments saying, mate, you're kidding, Archer. We've got to move on. So it's an issue.
Yeah, there's moving on, but having the right man to lead your ship is, for me, is huge. And I would, again, there's a reason why. Yeah, there's always a reason why some things never happen, which is a fast bowler being a captain. You know, Sean Pollock, he was an all-rounder. He could get in the side as a batsman alone in that South African side, batting at number seven. But for me, I'm sorry, if you put too much pressure on Pat Cummins, England, that could be the difference in England and winning the Ashes, because both batting units for me are frail and they're to be got at. Mm. And if Pat Cummins has got more eye on the captaincy, more worries on what's happening with his batting unit and his team as a collective unit, and he doesn't get the ball right in the right areas with that cuckoo ball, which is, you know how how dangerous it is for short periods of time, then all of a sudden, them little small margins could be the difference between, you know, England winning a Test match and taking the series, or I just look at that decision being a very, very big gamble for Australia. If there's nobody else, then fine. But as much as it's, you know, Steve Smith, yes, I'm not Australian, but if there's a natural leader there who's done it before, I think you've got to go with that, because I don't think this is the Australia of old. I think the captain of this ship is a big call, and if it's Pat Cummins for 5 Test matches, that I think England will be happier with that than they would be with Steve Smith.
I mean, it's such a great debating point, isn't it? And the only thing is, you've got to live in Australia to understand the ferocity of Sandpaper Gate. And because we're replacing a captain after a scandal, there's a feeling that you cannot go back to the captain of the previous scandal, who the captain of the latest scandal replaced. So, and I get that. I truly do. Like, even pushing Smith as vice captain, it's a risky business. Here's the thing, though. Smith wants the captaincy. Cummins doesn't really care if he gets it. He said, if you need me to do your favour, I'll do it. But he doesn't covet it at all. So I wouldn't mind seeing Marnus Labuschagne as an assistant vice captain. That sounds a bit silly, doesn't it? But I think he's 27 years old. He's got a batting average of nearly 60. They all say he's a very immature lad, and I get that. But you've got to give a guy a chance to grow. You know, let him, get him in the system there. He gets on well with Smith. They can work together. But I think you've got to look to the future a bit. I've urged them to do it. I bet they don't.
Crash, just finally, before we let you go, what seems to me to be more problematic, and I mean this from a playing perspective, is the way, I mean, Cricket Australia chair a couple of days ago said that the current board, first of all, he distanced himself from the decision that was made in 2018. He then said that the board, if given the same information today, would have reached a different decision. He then said that the code of conduct, which applied to the players, was fit for purpose. So how come the decision was made the way it was in 2018, but it would be made differently now? And my concern is that the rest of the playing group will feel and possibly be affected by the fact that Tim Payne has been thrown under a bus by administrators.
Oh, and try the new captain. The players are very, very, very much aware of that. Don't worry. That they think, gosh, you know, who people don't covet the Australian captaincy manners like they used to. It used to be the golden prize. But a lot of people like Pat Cummins now. He doesn't care whether he gets it or whether he doesn't, because he feels he will be abandoned. Oh, sorry, a lot of the players do. I can't say Cummins specifically, but I know the players as a group feel, you know, like the board would just, if there's a sniff of controversy, they run in the opposite direction. So it's a great point you make. There's so many contradictions in this. I mean, for a start, the board's got nothing to do with it. It's an integrity department decision. They found him not guilty. So I don't like the thought of boards overruling integrity departments. They should be independent. And whatever decision they make, for better or for worse, that's why you hire them. You know, so there was contradiction everywhere. We could talk for another hour about it. But the bottom line is Australia lacks leadership. It's everyone's fighting. There's 3 members of the current Cricket Australia board who have said we should not have pressured Tim Payne into resigning. They're not saying it publicly, but they say, what did we do that for? You know, so it's on, mate. Australia has an uncivil war happening 2 weeks out from the Ashes.
Thanks for your time, Crash. It's been always a pleasure talking to you, and we appreciate your insight.
Lovely to join you, boys.
And it's time now, as promised, to hear from the current Sri Lanka coach, soon-to-be Derbyshire coach, Mickey Arthur, who has been appointed as Derbyshire's head of cricket. Earlier this week, I spoke to Mickey in Colombo about his time in charge of Sri Lanka, what the future holds at Derbyshire, and his thoughts on England's chances in the Ashes.
Mickey, thank you so much for joining us. Let's start immediately with the news that you've signed for Derbyshire. It's a huge boon for the county game. And I know that after travelling the world and becoming the most experienced international coach in history, you're pretty looking forward to having a bit more, I don't know, stability, having some roots.
Yeah, look, I am, man. It's been, you know, it's sort of been 13 years now of international travel as an international coach, which has been incredible, you know. I was tempted perhaps to have another look at another year or two of Sri Lanka, but Derbyshire, the project just interested me. Everything about Derbyshire just interested me. You know, my mentor was the late Eddie Barlow, you know, and he turned Derbyshire around. So he used to tell stories about Derbyshire County Cricket Club. My first coach, Fred Swalbrook, he was a Derbyshire stalwart. So when the opportunity came up, I just thought, you know what, it would be really, really good, because Derbyshire are struggling at the moment. Let's be honest, they're languishing at the bottom. They've got some pretty good young players, and it's going to be a project to try and take them forward.
That was going to be my next question. You know, at international level, you pretty much most of the time are working with the finished product. It's just a question of polishing. And there's so much movement and travel. And I mean, this is an opportunity, I suppose, to work with seedlings and to actually grow something from, you know, through a course of a few years. Is that what you're looking forward to?
Yeah, exactly right. I'm really looking forward to having a look at the squad, shaping it, making it, putting my hand on it, and then trying to guide some young players to be the best they can be and get a little bit of a success along the way. So it certainly is something that really, I love building teams. Building teams for me is the best attribute I can have. I love just getting stuck in, identifying a brand, having a look at some talent, mixing some guys up, trying guys in different positions, giving them opportunity, and then just seeing how far they can take it. So that is something I'm really looking forward to.
I know you've always kept in touch with the global game. I mean, I know that you always know what's going on around the world. So the Azeem Rafiq hearings, developments, I know that you'll have been acutely aware of that. And also probably that he said that the month he spent on loan at Derbyshire was the happiest of his career. What have you made of it, Mickey? It's all very distressing and upsetting.
It has been incredibly distressing and upsetting. And Manners, I've taken a real, real interest in it, because I am going into the English game now. So it is something I need to be acutely aware of. So I've watched it, I've followed it, and it has been, it's been very distressing, to say the least. You know, racism, let's just be honest, has absolutely no place in any society. So to see and hear what he had to put up with has been pretty harrowing.
Mickey, one thing that you've always done very well is create a dressing room culture, I suppose. And there was criticism of the director of cricket, Martin Moxon, and the coaches. How much responsibility does the coach take for building that culture and, you know, being responsible for the way players treat each other? It's a difficult one, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it is a difficult one. And it's hard to comment on that, because if you're not actually in it, you actually don't understand it, I guess, and understand the exact circumstances that was happening within that dressing room. So it would be a bit foolhardy on me to comment on it without actually knowing the exact detail. What I do know, though, is a coach is wholly responsible for that culture in that dressing room, and is responsible for driving that culture forward, be that on the field and off the field. And that's something I've always been very acutely aware of, and something that I've always taken a pride in ensuring that it's both facets on and off the field are going in the right direction.
Can you just tell us what your role specifically will be at Derbyshire? I think you were described as head of cricket, which is a title that I'm not familiar with.
Yeah, so it's basically in layman's terms, and how it was described to me when I actually spoke to them, it's director of cricket in a tracksuit. So I'll be pretty much heading up all aspects of Derbyshire's cricket. I'll have a role to play in the talent pathway. I'll have I've got a role to play in obviously signing of players, direction, and then, you know, me in terms of my role is that I will also be hands-on with the first team, making sure that it's going in the right direction. What it does do as director of cricket is it'll free me up to go and have a watch of some younger players, go and have a watch of our second 11 as well. And also then, you know, in the recruitment, which is such an important part of any professional county. So I'll have my fingers across all parts of the cricket operation in the business.
I mentioned you being the most experienced. You're the only man in history. You know, I'm semi-obsessed with this, to have coached four test teams. It is a vast treasure trove of experience. Is that what did the people at Derbyshire expect from you? What are they asking for from you?
I think Derbyshire cricket had a particularly poor year last year. It certainly needs some change. It certainly needs an unblinkered view. It needs somebody coming in from the outside and assessing the structure, assessing the system, assessing the playing list, and then putting together something that's going to drive that club forward. So next year would be pretty much, you know, because the list is, bar our overseas players that I'm in the process of trying to sign, the list is pretty much signed. So I'll have a look, I'll assess it, and then put my style into it, I guess, and make sure that we put together a squad that's going to really challenge in all competitions.
Talking of change, you had to make quite a few changes at Sri Lanka, and it just seems that, you know, you turned this massive corner with them. And everybody was talking after the T20 World Cup about how exciting Sri Lanka was. And I saw Darren Sammy just yesterday said that, you know, look out for Sri Lanka at next year's T20 World Cup. Young players like Charitasilanka, Wanindu Hasaranga. It seems like a slightly strange time to be leaving them with such a bright future.
Yeah. Look, I guess it is. You know, we put together quite a nice side there. And that had taken some time for us. Sri Lankan cricket went through all sorts of change, and the one thing I can hang my hat on is that, you know, I was fairly instrumental in being the change agent for them, if you like, in terms of plotting the direction of a new young team. So I'm pretty excited to watch these guys develop. The one thing I will say is, and the one thing I do know for a fact is that, after this test series against the West Indies, and hopefully we go out with a win. And if we do, I can walk away knowing that I've left Sri Lankan cricket in a far better space than when I arrived. So that's something I'll certainly hang my hat on.
Moving to a more global aspect, if I may, how healthy is world cricket? And what does the future hold? You know, with the IPL expanding to 10 teams, the World Test Championship being squeezed, all bilateral cricket being squeezed by domestic T20 leagues. Are you cautiously optimistic or a little nervous about the future?
No, I'm still cautiously optimistic. But, you know, I'm always a glass half full guy. The leagues survive on international cricket. And the reason I say that is because your international cricket is still your shop window. The players are still owned by the countries. They have to get NOCs to participate in the leagues, and I think that is still a very, very good rule because that keeps the integrity of international cricket. I do think they can coexist without a doubt. There's going to be numerous. I mean, the cricket is just never ending. You know, the cycle is you just go from one game to the next. So you need bigger squads. You need to develop younger players. You need to make sure your players develop a lot quicker. But I do think that world cricket's in a fairly good state. You know, we saw the amount of viewers that the World 2020 had. It's a never-ending treadmill. But it happens because there's a genuine interest and people are genuinely interested in watching it.
All right, jumping around here. AB de Villiers is a man you know very well. He'll no longer be seen, at least in a playing capacity, on a cricket field. That's finding that quite difficult to digest at the moment.
Look, AB, I mean, what more can people say about him? He's just an absolute legend of the game. He's he'll go down as one of the greats, one of the pioneers of 360 batting. He'll always be remembered, and rightly so, because he was just a true champion.
Tell us something that we might not know about him without breaking any secrets.
AB was, during my time with him, he's just such an infectious human being. I'll tell you one thing that people don't know was he did babysit my kids once in Australia when Yvette and I went out for dinner, him and Mornay Morkel. I left my daughters in their company in the hotel. So So that's something he did. But he was just such an infectious character. What a wonderful, wonderful man. And, you know, it's, as I say, you can't speak more highly of him.
Okay, you mentioned England in Australia. So I have to ask you, not necessarily for a scoreline prediction, but so your thoughts on where the strengths and weaknesses of the two teams lie. How do you think the Ashes might go?
I think it's going to be a very well fought series. I think Australia have their noses in front in those conditions. I think if one had a look at it, I think the Australian seam bowling attack, I think is just ahead of England's. I think on the spinner front, I think Nathan Lyon bowls unbelievably well in Australia. They certainly shade that. And then with the likes of Warner coming back to form, Warner Smith, you've got two versus probably Joe Root, if you like. In terms of legendary batting status. So I do think that that Australia are just noses in front there for sure.
Brittle England top order, perhaps?
Yeah, look, I think untried top order. You got Rory Burns, who's done. Rory Burns has done well. I think Rory Burns has done as well as Rory Burns could do with the way he sets up. He's a gutsy cricketer, you know. He'll hang in there. But then I do really rate Zach Crawley. I've watched quite a lot of Zach Crawley, and I rate him quite highly. I think he's a very good player if given an extended run. You know, Ollie Pope's a good player. He's going to come under a little bit of scrutiny, but I think he will survive. I think his technique's good enough to survive. And I think Joe Root is a master. I think Joe Root and stats tell you he's top four in the world. So a lot will depend on how Joe Root bats.
We're wrapping up now, Mickey. I'm so grateful for your time. I really, really appreciate it. But I just need to ask you one more question about Sri Lanka and one more question about Derbyshire. Well, Sri Lanka, first of all, I presume very, very bright future. I see Angelo Matthews has been recalled to the Test squad as well.
Yeah, look, with our Test squad is in quite a good place. Dimuth Karunaratne leads it. He's a very good Test cricketer. Angelo Matthews, he comes in. Saranga Lakmal comes back. He's exceptional with his control in these conditions. Gets a little bit of reverse swing. So the older sort of players come back in. The other Test player we get is Lasith Embledenya, who's a wonderful left arm spinner. So our Test team is in a really good shape, and those senior players play in that Test team totally as leaders, and the younger boys certainly follow them. It was in the white ball where we changed it up quite a bit, because we thought we had got to a point with our white ball cricket that it needed an injection of youth. We needed to back some of these younger players to perform and give them time at least until 2023 to become experienced in white ball cricket. So that was kind of the differential between our Test team and our white ball team. But the Test team was always going to include the elder players.
And finally, back to Derbyshire, I find the concept of you living in a house with a garden and postal deliveries really quite strange. You've been living in a hotel for the last 2.5 years. You're going to have to live without room service. Where are you going to live?
Well, they're renting me a nice little, I've asked for a little apartment or a little cottage somewhere. I'm really looking forward to that. You're right. I Pakistan for 3 years, and then I haven't lived out of a hotel room for five and a bit years, apart from the 3 months between leaving Pakistan and taking the Sri Lanka option. It was actually interesting. You laugh about it. You know, I've got to go through all this rigmarole in terms of getting police clearance and that. And the first question that I always get asked is address. Well, I actually don't have an address at the moment, because my house in Perth is sold. My daughters are living in their flats. You know, they've moved on. I actually don't own any property anywhere, and I actually don't have an address. So it's quite embarrassing.
Well, we look forward to seeing you in Derbyshire, and I'm sure that once your new employers find out that you don't have an address, they will speed up the process of hiring you somewhere so you can get deliveries.
Spot on. I'll tell you what, I am going to need a number of the laundry service and a food delivery number for sure.
That was soon to be Derbyshire head of cricket, Mickey Arthur. Harmy, a lot that he had to say there. Big fan of Zach Crawley, just like you are. And he completely admits that Derbyshire is struggling and he's got his work cut out.
Yeah, he's got his work cut out, but I think it's brilliant for English cricket that we can attract somebody of the stature of Mickey Arthur to come and coach in first-class cricket. The players at Derbyshire, young players at Derbyshire, are in for a real treat because some of the players Mickey's coached and the teams he's coached around the world during his time of coaching are fantastic. He's coached some of the best teams in the world, some of the best players in the world. So I think Derbyshire have pulled off a coup there for me, and it's whether the young players can, you know, relate to Mickey and work hard with Mickey because he is a hard worker. And I think it's fantastic for English cricket that we've got somebody like that in our system. You know, I remember when Andy Flower came over to help Essex, and then he ends up going on to coach in England. You know, some of the players that came out of Essex at the time and then, you know, went on. This is good for English cricket, and you know, fingers crossed everybody in Derbyshire is excited to see somebody like Mickey come and coach them.
Right, 5 weeks, with 5 weeks to go before the first Ashes test, we started Harmy's top five memories. We couldn't fit, top five Ashes memories, that is. We couldn't fit in number four last week because we were so busy with the Azeem Rafiq story. So we're going to do number four and number three today, Harmy. So off you go, just before the break.
Well, number four is Lords 2005 for me. You know, five was the great atmosphere of Sydney with Steve Waugh's magnificent 100 in about 3 hours. But for me, this one is the first 2 hours of Lords. It was unbelievable. I've never experienced noise at Lords like it. Normally, when you walk through the long room, you've actually got to usher them out the way to say, "Can I, excuse me, pardon me, get the members out the way so you can, like..." The look at you is to say, "Well, what are you on about?" Well, I'm playing out there in 2 seconds if you let me get past you. Or they're looking at you as to say, "Oh, no, they've picked him again." But this was different. It was all roped off. It was a crescendo of posh people cheering. I've never heard noise like it. Rocking out. It was brilliant. Hayden got hit on the head first up. Langer got hit in the arm. Ponton got obviously hit in the head. England were fired up. We bowled them out for 190. And England think, right, we can win the Ashes. But then Glenn McGrath turned up. And I got my name on the honours board, so, which was pleasing. And then Glenn McGrath made my 5 for 40 look like 5 for 150, because I think at the end of play, he had 5 for 8 or something like that. So it was a great atmosphere. It was a great day. It was a day that England, the Test match England got beaten. But it was also a realisation that this bowling unit can bowl Australia out and take 20 wickets, and we can win the Ashes. Number three, a bit later on, well, I'll give you a clue, 15 years to the day when this happened.
We look forward to it. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. In case you missed it, international cricket returns to TalkSport 2 on Thursday as World Test Champions New Zealand face India in a two-match test series. We'll look ahead to that next up. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Here's Aksa Patel. He bowled it! All the gear and no idea.
Durrat off the back foot. Oh my goodness, that is going away at a rate of knots.
Anytime you play India, you know, you're always going to be the underdog, regardless of whether you're the world number one.
Here is Atherton again. Bowled him!
Williamson over the wicket, pulling hard and pulling high and pulling long. Kane Williamson not mucking around.
And he's out! Trent Bolt!
We can say we're world champions now and it's something different, you know, trying to retain it. Couldn't think of a harder place to start.
You don't want to go off and put the kettle on here, do you? You're going to miss something. Every single ball, something's happening.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorp, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. If you missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast, as always, now available on the Following On feed via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. Right, World Test Champions, inaugural World Test Champions, New Zealand begin the defence of their crown in a two-test series against India, which will be live on TalkSport 2 this Thursday. Here's New Zealand fast bowler Neil Wagner telling us how much the team are looking forward to it.
No one can take it away from me. It's something that's pretty special. I'm still very proud of. I guess the main thing for us now is put our head down and try and defend it. Give ourselves every best chance to play the cricket we've been playing, the brand we've been playing, and make New Zealanders proud. I think that's the main thing. Whatever the result is, as long as we obviously leave everything out there and give it our best and give it our all and play the way we play, the rest will take care of itself. So hopefully, yeah, things can unfold our way. Pretty confident that the boys and the crew we've got here is ready to get stuck in and put their hand up. So looking forward to the challenge.
Team composition's a really interesting one, isn't it, for New Zealand?
Yeah, it is. And it's I'm trying to work out how they're gonna try and line up. You know, there was talk of them playing three spinners, which means, you know, somebody like Kyle Jamieson would miss out. But Kyle Jamieson's, he didn't play a great deal in the 2020 World Cup. And the balance of their side could be huge. If they play, they want to play two spinners, three spinners, and Mitchell Santner has to bat number six, then I don't think these games are going to go 3 days. Because, you know, it's one thing playing in India in England to get for the World Test Championship. But like we've seen with England in Chennai and in India last winter, that the you've got to have, you know, you've got to have proper players, and the batting unit has got to be, you know, rock solid. And unfortunately, if you've got a number eight coming in at number six because the balance of your side doesn't work to try and get bowlers into your side, then you're going to struggle. So for me, it'll be interesting to see how they line up. They've got batters in that group, but have they got enough, you know, all round depth to fill to try and get to try and get 20 wickets? Wagner's probably going to play. It's not a test match without Wagner trying to wang it in halfway down a wicket and trying to hit the Indian batsman, which will be very, very difficult on these two surfaces that they're going to play on. But I'd expect Southey to play. I'd expect Wagner to play, then Santner. And it's just which of the other two bowling all-rounders that can try and fit into a group to make sure they've got enough batting options and also enough bowling options to take 20 wickets. I look at England going to India last year, and there was a hell of a lot on Joe Root. I actually think there's going to be more on Kieran Williamson in this side than there was on Root last year. So it's going to be intriguing to see what side a New Zealand player. But like you said before, never write New Zealand off in a team sport, because they seem to somehow find a way to be competitive and give themselves a chance. This will be a tall order against a very, very good and a very, very strong spin bowling unit of potentially Aksar Patel, Ravindra Jadeja and R. Ashwin. That will trouble any top order batsman.
After India won in Australia, won the Test Series, and before England went to India, we were discussing whether it was the best Indian team, and I think we reached the conclusion so if not before they beat India, beat England comfortably, then certainly afterwards, that they were the best Indian Test team in terms of depth and all-round quality, in terms of fast bowling and spin bowling and batting depth. And I think we can reach the same conclusion about the New Zealand team, can't we? Certainly in terms of depth. I mean, they've got match-winning spinners. And whereas for decades and decades they had certain brilliant match-winning players, individuals, and some journeymen to make up the numbers, this now is the real deal for New Zealand. This is probably their best team ever, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's the best pool of players ever. I'm not sure, other than out of this group, Williams and Taylor, probably Southee would get into an all-time New Zealand team. But actually, the 11, when you look at the group of players that they've got, without, you know, sticking Bolt in there as well, as a competitive unit, as a team goes, I don't think there's been many better New Zealand sides. So from that point of view, yes, I think they are probably the best pool of players that New Zealand's had, as a collective unit. And the same as India, because if you look at this India side, you're going to have Keir Rahul ruled out injured today. You're going to have no Rohit Sharma. You're going to have no Jasprit Bumrah, no Mohammad Shami, and no Virat Kohli. And I think these games might go 3 days, both two test matches against New Zealand, because of how strong India are in their own back garden. So that tells you everything about the depth of the Indian group as well. But from a New Zealand point of view, like I said before, you're always worried to write them off. But I think the balance of the side that New Zealand need, especially in Kampur, the first test match, they could then have to leave a batsman out to play a bowler who probably can't bat.
Don't forget that New Zealand are also without Devon Conway, with and also Trent Bolt, who's
Trent
out
Bolt,
with
yeah.
Bubble fatigue. So maybe that's a way for Kyle Jameson to get into the team there with Wagner and Southee. I mean, KL Rahul has just been ruled out as well. So there are some big names missing, and yet it's still really, really compelling. I mean, it's like a really good Premiership squad. I mean, you can take out half a dozen teams, players out of a Chelsea starting 11 or a Man City or Liverpool, and you know you don't think, oh, I'm not going to go.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what you look at this India side. I think if anything, you'd say that seam bowling options are a bit thinner. But I look at the batting options. You look at Agarwal, you know, top three of IPL cricket in the last 2 or 3 years, consistently scoring, you know, big runs, decent runs. We haven't mentioned Suresh Iyer, who will probably make his test match debut batting at number 4. Well, Virat Kohli has the first week off. Rahane needs a score, but, you know, captain seems to bring the best out of Ajinkya Rahane. And obviously, we mentioned as well, no Rishabh Pant. I don't think Rishabh Pant is not going to be involved. So Widdermann Sahar is going to get his test match. I think it's his test match debut. He might have played one test match, but he's going to play. So as much as, you know, the big game, the big guns and some of the big names aren't there, this is still going to be a very, very good India side in India. And that's why, you know, you look at the New Zealand side and you think, well, even though there are a couple of players missing, there's a huge amount of pressure again on, like we say with England, with Joe Root, there's a huge amount of pressure on Kane Williamson to score the bulk of the runs to give New Zealand something to bowl at, and also something to somehow to try and find a way of putting themselves in a winning position in a test match. New Zealand are good at that, but they're going to have to do very, very well with the likes of Trent Bolt, especially not playing.
Ross Taylor is a legend of New Zealand cricket. He's a world-class player, has been for a long time. He was told 6 months ago that he wasn't going to be part of the T20 World Cup squad, and that he was being rested from various series. And he's admitted that that it's the longest break he's had from the game in his mid-30s since he started, really. And I imagine he'll be very, very fresh and hungry to go. But I'll get your thoughts on what such a long break might do to a player of his age and experience. But this was him talking about New Zealand still being the underdogs despite India resting so many stars.
Anytime you play India at home, you're always going to be the underdog, regardless of whether you're the world number one or where they sit in international cricket at the time. But obviously they're resting a couple of players, but they're still a formidable side. They know these conditions really well, and The way we adapt to these conditions is going to be the key going forward. But obviously these conditions are a lot foreign to us. But, you know, some of the guys have played here many a time before, and we'll be looking forward to hopefully using that experience to make things slightly easier. But, you know, we know it's going to be tough.
He seemed quite happy. When he was initially left out of the of various teams of the T20 squad a year or so ago, he was a bit grumpy about it and said he wanted to play every format and still wanted to play every game. But he accepted with apparently very good grace his omission from recent squads, from recent tours, in order to be saved for these two test matches. So I should imagine he's raring to go.
Yeah, he'd be desperate to get out in the middle. And I think sometimes when you are at the age that Ross is at, it's a case of, well, you know, can I prolong my career another year and another year? And it's you go year upon year. It's like having a 35, 36-year-old footballer just getting a one-year contract at the end of it, still top of their game. But they need that drive. They need that little bit of... a little bit of rest, but also, you know, to still be involved in international cricket is something that will be driving Ross on. And this is a big series because, you see, he hasn't had this break for a while. So he hasn't had as big a break for a while, so he'd be raring to go. Again, like Williamson, there's pressure, a huge amount of pressure on Ross Taylor's shoulders to score the runs, the volume of the runs that New Zealand need to give them a good chance of being in a position and a winning position. But I think New Zealand are going to have to use all the experience of Williamson and Taylor in that middle order to somehow find a way of getting them a score. And, you know, he's got bags and bags of experience. Just hopefully the layoff hasn't, you know, derailed anything of his hunger for the game, because sometimes you can, after a while, you know, if, especially, you know, the age that Ross is getting, it just knocks you a little bit. And I think that is the biggest challenge for Ross Taylor, being able to switch on and switch off from having long periods away from the game.
And finally, a look at the composition of the Indian team. Now, if they bat Vridhiman Saha, the keeper, at number six, which is probably a position too high, although he does bat there in domestic cricket, then they can also play three spinners with Jadeja, Ashwin and Akshar Patel, and two seamers if they decide to go that route. You know, what I find really, really exciting is the fact that the World Test Championship means there are 120 points available, 60 points a test match. Mm. I mean, the system's the system is far from perfect, because you play five Ashes tests and you only get 20 points or 25 points per test match. Here, there's 120 points available. So it's not, you know, if it was just two random test matches, then the Indian selectors would say, well, it's only New Zealand. We can do that. We can have a long tail. But, you know, they played in the inaugural World Test Championship, and it meant a heap to both of them. So they can't take selection lightly here.
No, I don't. And then they haven't. I don't think they have. I think they've looked after their big guns who have been travelling the world, the likes of Shami, Bumrah, Pant, Sharma. Virat, it just tells you Virat's going to play. He's going to miss one test match, and he's going to come back and play in the second test match. So India are taking it seriously, and with them that many points on the board, two test match victory here, you're three quarters of the way towards being in the final, to be fair, for the next time it comes around. It's a good India side. It's a very good India side. You know, Kampur in the first test match, Mumbai second test match. Maybe he's a little bit more pace on the surface in Mumbai, so you might just get two spinners in that test match, a better batting wicket. But I think Kampur was saying it's going to be a lot drier, a lot dustier, so three spinners each side could be the way to go. And if India go in with three spinners in that side, Vridhiman Saha at six, yes, he might be one place too high, but when you've got Ravindra Jadeja, R. Ashwin and Akshar Patel to bat behind them, one of them's going to come in at nine. That's good. That's decent. And I think that could be the difference between the balance of the India side and the balance of the New Zealand side.
And a reminder, you can hear live commentary of India's two-match test series against New Zealand, and you can hear it live on TalkSport 2 this Thursday from 4 a.m. Me and Harmy are on the team. To listen, download the free TalkSport app or ask your smart speaker to play TalkSport 2. This is the section of the programme where we wrap up all the other news, or as much as we can fit in. Starting with further fallout from the Azeem Rafiq case, after it emerged that he had sent anti-Semitic messages to a fellow player on Facebook. It was a long time ago, Harmy. A lot of people are being made to regret things they did over a decade ago when they were young and naive and not the people they are today. It doesn't distract or detract from the wider issue, which is the way he and other people were treated and continue to be treated. I mean, the fact that he sent this message is something that he regrets and he's apologised for, but it just, for me, doesn't change the big picture.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It just puts him on the bottom of the list, that on the other side of the list that have been... He needs to know that he did wrong and he should know better. For me, two wrongs make a wrong, and it's as simple as that. What happened to Azeem was wrong. What Azeem did was wrong. The problem that Azeem was always going to have, and he still has to, there still possibly could be, is when you start throwing accusations around, which Azeem did, and the accusations were serious. They weren't followed up, and he kept it going, which was, you know, we commend him for, because I think it makes real change to our great game and to society as well. But, you know, he made it wrong as well. And when you put yourself in the position of Azeem, people are going to fight back and people are going to have things on other people, and you're going to open a whole new can of worms that you weren't expecting to go down from a road point of view. But is this not why this has happened? Is this not why we are trying to make society better? Is this not why we are trying to help people in our game be comfortable in our game and, you know, be feel as though they're wanted in our game, and make sure that when they get to an age where they're not getting victimized, they're not getting bullied and not getting picked on because of what we're going through now? And I think sometimes you might have to, the storm might have to get a little bit more choppy before it actually gets calmer and gets better and we can move forward with that. And I think that is something that in the next few weeks it's going to be so important. Yorkshire had a whistleblower hotline. 36 people came forward. Fantastic. Well done. Great. 36 people have come forward, because we need the whole lot to come out. And then we can start rebuilding our great game, whether it's at Yorkshire, whether it's with England, whether it's with society. And I think that's the most important thing. So I don't think we're anywhere near through it. I think there is still a lot to come from the fallout of what happened in front of the MPs and Azeem Rafiq. But I think, you know, every step we take forward is a better one for society and for cricket moving forward.
OK, Harmy, we've got your Ashes number 3 moment to come. That's the highlight we're looking forward to. But before we get there, very quickly, the ICC announced the venues for all of the ICC events right up until 2030. The highlights being they're going to go to the United States. They've been wanting to do that for over a decade. West Indies and USA host a T20 World Cup in 2024. Pakistan get the 2025 Champions Trophy with all that entails. Will India go? South Africa and Zimbabwe and Namibia will host the World Cup in 2027, the 50-over World Cup. And, of course, it comes back to England, Ireland and Scotland as co-hosts in 2030. So your thoughts on all of that being announced?
It's brilliant, manners. Look at the lineup on that's fantastic. I just need a little memo to our bosses and say, can we get the ICC trophy? Can we get the ICC competitions? You know, brilliant to see you going to America. We've always wanted to sort of break into America. I did a World Cup in South Africa. Obviously, didn't go to Zimbabwe, but it's great to see Namibia get recognition for what they've just done, qualifying for a tournament. That'll be fantastic. England, Ireland, Scotland, be a great carnival over here. But I think for me, the pick of the whole lot is Pakistan. If cricket can get back into Pakistan, that great country, a great nation, that, you know, the colourful characters that have come out of Pakistan, the way they've played their cricket, if we can get it back into Pakistan, if we can get India to go to Pakistan in 2025 to play the Champions Trophy, I think that, for me, is the highlight of what's just been mentioned. So it looks fantastic. We'd love to be commentating on it, manners. Yeah, a heads up to our bosses. But again, yeah, a lot of ICC trophy competitions, and there's some fantastic venues there.
And news, of course, that one of your favourite young players, Bryden Carse, has been ruled out of the Lions Tour and the Big Bash due to a knee injury. We wish him speedy recovery. OK, we've got a couple of minutes left. It's that time. We've got 2 weeks to go till the Ashes start. So, Harmy's Ashes memories.
My number three memory, it has to be, in it 15 years today, is I've always never had a problem talking about it. That ball at Brisbane, 2006, 15 years ago today, when my best mate, Andrew Flintoff, captain of England, threw me the ball and said, right, you go and take the first over in this long-awaited Ashes series. And then 25 seconds, I duly obliged by giving him it back. it's just one of them things, man. I tried too hard. Preparation is everything, but unfortunately my preparation going into that series was shocking. I didn't play in Adelaide the week before. I was nervous. I remember talking to Neil Fairbrother about it, and Neil Fairbrother said, I've never seen you nervous before, but the night before that game, that's as nervous as I've ever seen anybody. And then, like I said, I duly obliged by putting the ball straight back into Andrew Flintoff's hands without Justin Langer getting anywhere near it. Matthew Hoggard's running in from fine leg, got to the 30-yard circle with his arms in the air, waving them around, thinking, why is nobody cheering? It's just gone straight to second slip. Surely he hasn't. Matthew, I did, and then he started doing sort of stretching, and he's throwing his arms around stretching because he was bowling the next over. So, look, unfortunately, it was one of them things in history that happened. I got to bowl another ball. My pride and joy of that series was I never missed a test match. I played every single day. Can you imagine the abuse I got for 9 weeks on that trip after that first ball? We weren't very good. Australia were fantastic, and they deserved to beat us 5-0 because we didn't have the right side. Oh, players that were good enough to play against that great Australia side in Australia. Vaughan was gone, Triscothic was gone, Jones was gone. We were a shadow of the side that played them in 2005. And it didn't matter whether it was Andrew Strauss or Andrew Flintoff as captain. I think if Michael Vaughan had been captain, we still would have gotten beat 5-0.
Did you ever bowl a ball like that before or after?
No, I didn't. I did get asked. By a journalist the next summer. Came to the ground at Durham, and he said it was 33-1 for a wide for the first ball. And I quickly evicted him from the Riverside. But it was a good job. Three or four of my teammates got in between me because I was like, "You really think if I wanted a bowl a wide at 33-1, I would have done it that way? Please." So no, I've never done it again. I was just one of them things. I can laugh about it now.
We look forward to your top two memories in the next fortnight before the first test at the Gabba. Thanks, Harmy. You've been listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. And don't forget, you can hear India's two-match test series against New Zealand live right here on TalkSport 2 starting this Thursday from 4 a.m. We'll be back at the same time next week to look back at that first test and look ahead to the second, amongst other things. This has been the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.